Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with www.learnvisualstudio.net, where I teach beginners the skills they need to get their first software development job building Windows and web apps at the world's best companies as quickly as possible. So in this lesson, we're going to pick back up with the default Hub app template prior to making any changes to it. So previously, we learned about the Hub control and its various Hub sections. We learned how each panel of content in the Hub control is arranged using a series of data templates. Data templates that not only control the flow of each item, but then the layout of each individual item as well. All right, we'll get back into that in a little while. All right, so in this lesson, what we want to do is look at where the actual data is coming from. In the next lesson, then, we're going to look at how we use the data model that we'll discuss in this lesson to bind the user interface to the underlying data. So first, let's, at a very high level, talk about the idea of binding. What is data binding? We'll discuss a little bit more detail in the next lesson, but at a very high level, you have a collection of objects. Let's say, for example, you have a collection of cars, like you see on screen here. List of car called cars equals a new list of car. So let's suppose that that car class is just really simple, just like the classes that we saw in the C-sharp Fundamentals for Absolute Beginners on Microsoft Virtual Academy and Channel 9. So these are properties that you're mostly familiar with. ID, make, model, year. We may have an image path that would be a link to an image that's somewhere like in our assets folder, okay? And so we can then add instances of the car class to our cars collection by either hard coding them in our code, which makes no sense. What we would probably do is open up some sort of file that contains data. For example, a text file or maybe a database file. So suppose you read the data from a comma delimited file that had the ID, the make, the model, the year, and the image path, and just, you know, a listing of maybe a dozen, two dozen, 100 various cars, and you create an instance of the car class for each of those rows of data inside that comma delimited file. Or perhaps you were to use a different file format. Let's say the JSON file format, which stands for JavaScript Object Notation. It's just a different way of representing that same data in a more JavaScript friendly sort of way. We'll come back to that in just a moment. But regardless of the format of the data and how it's saved on disk, what we ultimately want to do is create an instance of each of those cars, add them to the cars collection. And now that we have a collection of cars, we would have a complete, albeit a very simple, data model. All right, we would even maybe call this an object graph at that point. I'll use those terms synonymously. So in other words, we have the classes and any code that would be required to open up that data file, read the contents of that data file, and create new instances of the car class for each row of data in that file. And once we have those instances of those objects, add them to the car, cars collection, we essentially have a data model. That's all it is, all right? So it's not just the objects themselves that have been fully instantiated, but also any of the code that will retrieve the data from some persistence format, a file format, from the cloud database, or whatever the case might be, all right? And then create those. That's all a data model. And so once you have that data model in place, essentially a collection of cars in memory, now you can bind that collection to some user interface control, like a grid view, for example, or a list view control, for example, so that you can display that data in some tabular format, some list style format, whatever the case might be. You could use that image path property as the data source for a thumbnail image for each of the items. So for each of the cars, so the user can look at their phone or their Windows app and see the image of the car next to its descriptive properties like its make, its model, its year, and so on. And then clicking on a given item in the grid view would allow you to see more information about that given car and maybe something like our item template, our items detail, itemsdetail.xaml, okay? And we'll talk more about that in the next lesson. So hopefully you understand what we're trying to accomplish here. That's what I'm really after. The Hub App Project Template supplies you with a generic data model, including sample data, so classes that represent the data, and then the actual data that will be used to create instances of those classes. And ideally, you can just modify what they already have and use it for whatever type of data, whatever purpose that you have in mind. In fact, later on in this series, we're going to do exactly that. We're going to modify this Hub App template to create a complete app that displays images and recipes for cupcakes. And so you can see how flexible this idea is when we do that. All right, so where is this data model of which we speak? Well, we're going to drill down into the data model folder. You can see there are two files there. First of all, let's talk about the file called sampledatasource.cs. And if we were to roll this up, we would see that there are essentially three main classes here. Now, we know in our mind from our previous look at the Hub App template as we ran it originally that there were groups, a series of groups, and each group had associated with it one or more items. All right, so that's what's at play here. Here is the sample data group class, and here is the sample data item class. Inside the sample data group, each group has a title, it has a subtitle, a description, an image path, and then an items property, which, as you can see, is a collection of individual sample data items. Wait, Bob, what is this observable collection? Just ignore that for a moment. In your brain, don't see the word observable collection, just see list. We'll come back to the notion of observable collections later. So just a list of sample data items. Well, let's take a look at the members of the sample data item class. We have unique ID, title, subtitle, description, image path, and then content. Now, we haven't seen all of these in use in the Hub App template project, but we've seen, you know, title and subtitle. We saw the image displayed. We also saw how this unique ID property was used for the purposes of navigation, so that when a user clicked on one item, it took us to the itempage.xaml for that specific item. So we saw how in the frame it was the item page class was instantiated, and then it was given a unique ID, an item ID, so that it could load up the proper item and the user would be looking at it. If they clicked on item 4, they would see item 4 on the page, right? Okay. So that represents the structure of the data. And then there's a third class, and we'll come back and look at this in more depth. But first of all, notice that besides the declaration of the properties and the constructor, which simply just is an overloaded constructor allowing you to set all the properties at the moment of instantiation, there's not a lot more to the sample data group. The same is true for sample data item. There are no other methods really besides the overloaded constructor. All right. Then we have sample data source. And at a high level, this is going to do basically two things for us. First of all, it's going to be responsible for loading up the data from a data file and creating instances of sample data group and sample data item and associating them all together. After it's done that, then it's going to make public the collection of groups with the associated item. And there's a couple of different ways that it does this. Whether through a public property groups, whether through this method called get groups async, or get an individual group async, or get a specific item based on its unique ID. All right. And then finally, there's this get sample data async. We'll talk about that more in depth. We'll talk about how it actually retrieves that data from a file and then creates instances of data group, sample data groups and sample data items. Okay, talk about that in a minute. All right, so that explains what this first file in the data model folder does. What about this second file? Well, let's open it up. You can see here that we have data in some strange format with curly braces, square braces, a lot of colons. Here are some words we recognize, like unique ID, title, subtitle, image path. These seem to be somehow associated with the notion of a group. All right, and so the unique ID group one, title group title one. So what we can see here first is that if we scroll down, we have a number of different groups, and then kind of indented inside of there the items for a given group, and we see a number of items created, like item title one, item title two, item title three, and so on. And so what is this? It's in a format called JSON, if you're not already familiar with it. It stands for JavaScript Object Notation. And I created an entire lesson on JavaScript objects and JavaScript Object Notation on the JavaScript Fundamentals for Absolute Beginner series that you can find on Channel 9 and on Microsoft Virtual Academy. So I recommend that you watch it. I think it's like halfway through that series. Something about JavaScript Object Literals or something like that. It talks about JSON in this particular file format, but it's not hard to figure out on your own. You can see a name of a collection, and inside of that collection, it's delineated with square brackets. Here are individual instances of things. Here we have an instance of a group class, and inside of its items property, so there's this property colon the value of that property for this given instance. All right, so it's an easy way to see the name and the value for a given property. And here is another collection of instances, in this case, instances with unique ID, title, subtitle, image path, description, and content. These are sample data items instances. All right, and again, the property name and the value. So picking apart the JavaScript object notation is not difficult. Parsing through it, there will be classes, as we'll take a look at in just a moment, in the the phone and Windows API that allow you to parse through this data. And so I realize at first glance that JSON can be a bit intimidating. However, the good news is that it's becoming a pretty popular file format for data, and it has the added benefit of being easily utilized by JavaScript and some commercial and open source document databases as well. All right, so, you know, I would say I get asked the following questions often whenever talking about these data formats and why did Microsoft choose that file format for this template? So why did they choose this as opposed to, say, for example, a comma delimited file format? Well, I don't have any special knowledge about this at all. I can only kind of deduce what I think was going on in their minds. I suspect there's two reasons for that. First of all, JSON files can easily represent object graphs like you see here, where you have collections of objects that own collections of objects. And we can see that represented through indentation and through the various characters that either represent instances or collections of instances of objects, okay? And so you can't really get that from a flat file structure like comma delimited files. And then the second reason I think that Microsoft chose this is because it's relatively to read and write JSON using the built-in classes that we're going to learn throughout the remainder of the series, like I mentioned a moment ago. And then the second question that I get asked with relation to this is, well, if I don't want to use JSON, do I want to use some other file format? So maybe a structured relational database instead of JSON? Can I do that? Absolutely. Now, I haven't personally done this. I don't have any videos on this, so I can't really point you in the right direction from something I've done, but I know they're out there. I know some have tried to use SQL Server Compact or LocalDB and had some success with it. Others have had success with a local file-based database called SQLite. And again, I haven't tried either of these techniques. I'm definitely not the expert or the guy to go to for this kind of information. But I suspect it is possible. Just do some clever searches, and I'm sure you'll find some good tutorials on how to do that. Also, you could use some external service, such as those available on Microsoft Azure or Azure Mobile Services. We don't cover those in this series, but these are all good options depending on the requirements of your application and how much you're willing to spend and how much you're willing to learn. Okay. So one final thing that I want to address conceptually or generically at a high level. Again, thinking about this notion of what really is a data model. This is a term that deals with your applications architecture, or in other words, how you separate and layer your application's code. So typically what you want to do when you're writing software, doesn't matter if it's a phone app or a full-blown enterprise software software project, okay? You want to keep logical layers separated, and in most applications, this means that you keep the persistence code, the code that deals with the data and where it's stored and how to retrieve it, separate from the business rules or the business logic that you're going to write to operate on that data. Any calculations, any checks, any comparisons, those are called business logic. Even if it's a game, it's still called business logic, okay? And you want to keep all that separated from the layer that you would typically see above that, which is the presentation layer. It's how that data is then displayed on screen to the end user. All right, so the benefit of abstracting these different responsibilities of your application code is that it allows you to manage the change that comes in your application more effectively. It allows you to actually either change out entire layers or fix issues inside of a layer without it really affecting the other layers above it. And that's as far as I'm going to go. I'm going to resist the urge to talk about application architecture in more detail here because I talk about it a lot on my own website. Be sure you check it out on my website, learnvisualstudio.net. So the data model is basically just a layer that encapsulates all the logic that's required to retrieve data from an underlying data source, such as in this case, a JSON file, it could be a database, and then it's tasked with taking that data and then creating instances of classes that represent that data in the computer's memory. So in our case, the result of calling into the data model is an object graph that contains all the data that we need to use and display within our application. So as I said earlier, the data model, or more specifically, this sample data source.cs, has several classes that are all collected into one file. The sample data item is the child, the sample data group is the parent, and for the most part, as we said, these are just data structures. There's no real methods outside of the constructor, just a set of properties. And all the real heavy lifting here is done in this sample data source method. Now, we can take a look at this line by line. What I really want to do is we'll focus on the final method, but let's talk about all the code leading up to that. First of all, you can see that there's this line of code that looks a little odd. Private static sample data source underscore sample data source equals new sample data source. And this is just implementing a pattern in software development called singleton. It basically forces just one instance of a class to ever be created, never more. So you can only create one in instance of this class. If they ever ask for a new instance, it's just going to deliver back to it the same instance that's already been created. And that just prevents you from having to go through and constantly being reading from that file for every other page that you navigate to in the app. And everything can bind to it and know that it has the most recent updated version of the data by implementing this singleton pattern. Next up is this private and public property, so the private field groups and the public property groups read-only, so you can that means only the sample data source can modify this collection of groups. And this is just, again, an observable collection of sample data group. Just think for today or this moment, a list of groups. And then below that, we have three methods that are simply retrieving us either all groups, a specific group, or a specific item given the unique ID for each. All right. If you take a look at the implementation for these, they all call this get sample data async, get sample data async, get sample data async. And we'll talk about how it does its magic in just a moment. But what comes out of that is a populated list of groups in our groups property that we just talked about a moment ago, the collection of groups. That's been loaded up from the JSON file into memory, and now we can work with it. And how do we get all the groups? Well, we just access that property. But what if we want to get just one single group? Well, then we perform this link query, to get a single group or this link query to get a single item, no matter which group it's contained inside of. All right, and we just return the first. All right, so that's the purpose of those three methods. Now, all the real heavy lifting is done by this last method, this get sample data async. And, you know, in pseudocode, I'll just talk through at a high level what it does, and we'll get into the specifics of how to work with storage files using the API and so forth later on. But at a high level, first of all, we want to make sure that there's no data already in groups. If we already have data in groups, then don't load it again. Just exit out of this method. Next up, we're going to open up the data file, and then we're going to read the file's contents into a string and then parse it into the JSON format so that the phone API can work with objects instead of just a raw string. All right, so now it knows it's working with JSON objects. It parses through it and knows that these are groups, these are instances of items, but at this point it doesn't really have any notion of exactly our data model. And so that's what happens next, where we turn those individual JSON objects into specifically sample data groups and then specifically sample data items. So we loop through each group in the JSON object structure, and then we loop through each array of items in our JSON object structure, and then finally add all the groups to the groups property here. And then we have the data loaded in memory, ready to work with it, ready to bind with it. And so that, in a nutshell, is how this sample data model works. However, I think it's important to emphasize that you don't have to follow this exact technique or this exact approach, even if your data is different. You can replace some of this or all of this. You can use a comma delimited file if you really want to. It's just a template. It's not a requirement. It just gives you a simple implementation, really, for you to pick apart and use the pieces you like and throw away the rest. Your application might require a less complex class hierarchy. Maybe you don't need groups and items. Maybe you just need one layer, one collection of cars, for example. Or perhaps you need a much more complex object model. Go ahead and implement that, whatever you need for your application. You can even retrieve data from over the internet, like we talked about a moment ago, using Microsoft Azure or Azure Mobile Services. But at the end of the day, you're going to want to make this your own. You're going to want to change this and be specific to your application's problem domain. So as long as the result of your data model ends up being a collection that you can bind to from within XAML, you are in good shape. That's all you need to come out of your data model. All right. And so that's what we're going to talk about in the next two lessons. We'll see you there. Thank you.